Hello. Hello, darlings. This is Tina Del Twist here. I'm sending you this message because I'm very excited to be singing and speaking and performing at Nellie Thomas's podcast, Dear Nellie, Art a Hobbit special, where the theme is queers and joy. Joy queer, queer joy. I don't even know what that means, but I'm very excited to be doing it. It's going to be an absolute riot. See you there. Ta-ta.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through.
All right, welcome to Dear Nelly, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40, and we're back for Thirsty Thirds.
The thirstiest third
I've ever known in my life. It is Scott Brennan.
I'm so thirsty. And you are a cool drink of water right now, Nelly Thomas.
I'm a G&T, babe. G&T.
Oh, hang on a minute. Somebody's speaking my fucking language. All right. Okay.
Just for listeners, it's Friday afternoon. You're probably listening to this in about a month's time, but we're in the middle of comedy festival and Scott is sucking on a durry and drinking a G&T out of a skull cup.
Yeah, it's the breakfast of champions, I call it.
It is the comedic breakfast. So Thirsty Thirds, we do things a little bit differently, but I'm going to hold your hand. I'm going to walk you through it. First of all, I'd like to know how you are and if you'd like to give us an update.
Look, I'm going completely nuts. As you know, if you've kept in that bit at the start of the the recording, I was meowing a lot.
You were.
Meow. in the middle of comedy festival.
Yeah.
Just busy and craziness, but loving it. Absolutely sick. I'm doing the Granny's show, Brave New World, which I've written a whole bunch of songs and I'm playing live too, which has been a stress in itself because I'm, you know, a bit nervous playing keyboard live, but that's been a nice challenge. And I've been very busy. I did the Fountain Lakes in Lockdown show.
Yeah.
And that's now touring and we're doing the Sydney Opera House and Brisbane and all sorts
How lovely.
So it's all going on sale and it's great to be busy.
And, of course, I will plug the absolute shit out of all of those things. They'll be in the show notes. We'll put them on socials as well. Mm. To go back, your first episode with us was really focused mostly on the end of a long-term relationship where you were blindsided by infidelity.
Yes.
And a lot of people, geez, they loved that episode because that is unfortunately a very common story. With our sloppy seconds, I think you got to ask me some more things. I know there's an update on the love front. Would you be comfortable going into it or no? I will respect your boundaries.
I'm no longer engaged.
Yeah.
Let's leave it at that. I'm still processing.
Yeah.
There might be there'll be a different edge to this podcast, perhaps.
That's also okay. So obviously, as always, if I ask you anything you don't want to go there, you tell me. But the reality is that you are now a single man in the wild.
Out in the wild, yes. Not
are you single
and single?
Are you ready to mingle or
not,
what's going
not quite.
On? Yeah.
But I'm ready to fuck around.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what's the right, but is there a single and ready to mingle? I'm just, you know, horny and ready to fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, your shingle's out.
Yeah. That's
right. Single and ready to shingle.
That's right. Yes. I don't know about shingles, though. That makes me think
No, different sort of shingle.
I'm ready to mingle genitalia.
Yeah. And dare I ask, how's that going?
Oh, you know, not terribly.
Yeah. You're just ready.
It's all academic at the moment.
Yeah.
But it's why it's so good to be so busy and, you know, a little distracted and ready, you know, ready to take on the world in other ways, perhaps.
Lovely. And can I say, you know, why would I miss this opportunity to give it a plug? We are doing another live show for Ida Hobbit in Melbourne. And the focus of that show, for those who don't know Ida Hobbit, it is the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Transphobia, Intersex Phobia, all the things.
Because we are sick of all that shit.
We've had enough.
Oh, my God. Just don't even.
No more. And on that note, actually, what I've decided to do with the show, which you're finding out in real time, is that I want all of us who are involved, so it'll be me, you, Geraldine Hickey, Tina Del Twist, Dr. Kwari Ling, and a special guest that I can't name because their job's too important. That really good speaker. What I want to do is tell stories of queer joy, right? So... I want us to, and that could be you put your shingle out and you had a one-night stand. Could be the day I got married. It could be how much you love your queer family. It could anything, but we're going to focus on love and joy and sex and just have a bloody good time.
Great. And then we'll all go back to your place, Nelly, and whatever happens, happens. You know?
Whatever happens in the northern suburbs of Melbourne stays in the northern suburbs of Melbourne.
Yeah, you know. We're all friends here. I love that idea. I love that.
Yeah, I think it's not, you know what? We talk about it's necessary and you're currently doing it. It's necessary to sit in the shit sometimes and feel the big feelings and all that sort of stuff. But there's also a place, I read this beautiful poem that I'll probably read out on the night, which talks about joy as an act of resistance.
Ah, yes.
And there is a place for particularly minority groups, but it could be bloody divorced people. It could be single people. It doesn't just have to be queer people.
Yep.
So do we have to always talk about trauma? Do we have to always talk about hard stuff?
I think you've just hit, you know, the meaning of pride on the head, really.
No?
Yeah, I think, you've hit the meaning of pride on the head. Just be, you know, it's about happiness. It's about joy. It's about all the good stuff. And
they coexist. Like you're in a period of heartbreak and rebuilding, but your shingle's also out, darling.
Oh, is it? Shit, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. Luckily, podcasts are just not a visual medium, so that's...
Oh, my God, I couldn't love you more. You are appropriately inappropriate.
Sorry about that, everyone. I am on a watch list.
Can I give you a glorious little listener update on the uplifting front? So what you may or may not know, in fact, no, you do know because you've attended one, for Dear Nelly subscribers, so through Patreon mainly, we do monthly Zoom sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And at our last one, the co-hosts that joined me were Adam Richard and producer Faye.
Oh.
And we had a beautiful, beautiful time. And one of our listeners was recently divorced, as in I think maybe a year or two ago, like in the last couple of years. She's similar age to me and she decided to get back into dating, that the podcast had encouraged her to give it another go.
Them.
And she decided she was going to do speed dating and she joined the Zoom so we could give her tips.
Great.
How fun. So can I read a little letter she sent me?
Oh, please.
So, Dear Nelly, I just wanted to say a big thank you to you, Faye and Adam, for this afternoon Zoom session. It was totally lovely and somewhat surreal seeing and speaking to you all. You are beautiful people and I felt so warmly included.
Oh,
isn't that adorable?
That's so nice. I just want constant updates now.
Me too.
The dating's going and I want to know.
I cannot tell you how invested we all were. We were like three flies on shit. Not that she's shit, but you know what I mean? We're like, ooh, speed dating. Worked Look, questions. Like, it was so fun.
Great. Oh, great. Oh, I see you're having a positive effect on the world, Nelly.
Well, we try, don't we? We try. Now, one of our segments for Thirsty Thirds is called A Love Be Tender because, you know, I love a pun and I also love Elvis. Problematic, but whatever. So I invite you as my co-host to tell me, could be a song, could be a poem, movie, book, anything like that, that has really resonated with you about sex or love or romance over the years. What have you got for me, Scott Brennan?
Well, I agonized over this.
Yeah.
Oh, what is the one thing? Because I'm, you know, I am in some ways I'm a hopeless romantic, but in other ways, you know, I'm just, you know, not very mushy, and so I'm kind of like, what's resonated? And there's one, and I think I am a hopeless romantic because the thing that I come up with that I kept coming back to, it's a short story by Oscar Wilde.
Oh. Before you read it, or before you tell me about it, can I just say the way you described yourself then, I immediately had two visions.
Mm.
One was of Christos Tsolkas, who I will get on the podcast at some point. For anyone who knows Christos, beautiful writer, writes exquisitely about filthy sex, but also life in general. And the other one was Celine Dion. And I thought, Scott Brennan, you are equal parts of both.
I'm so happy with that.
Right.
I am. So happy with that.
Can I write your bio? Because that is a summation.
Please. And I mean, that's just, yeah, I want to put that into AI and just see what kind of image that produces now.
Head on and my heart will go on.
My heart will go head on.
And there could be a slap involved.
Yeah, but on her chest when she's getting the high notes.
Oh,
oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God, love it. All right, tell me about this short story.
So it is, it's The Happy Prince.
Don't know it.
Wild. You don't know it?
No.
Beautiful short story. And it just, I'm going to try and tell you to talk about it without sobbing because always, every time I read it, and I've actually read it to other people as well, because, you know, I'm kind of a big proponent. I sell this to other people, this story. I sob at the end every single time. But it's about the statue, in a nutshell, it's about the statue of a prince who's in the middle of a town square, who's resplendent and covered in gold leaf with jewels for eyes and jewels in the hilt of his sword. And he stands in the town square but can see all the misery in the town, all the poverty and the hunger and the people who are cold and poor, and he feels terrible for them. And he befriends a little swallow. All the swallows have flown south for the winter, but one little swallow has kind of stayed a little bit late.
Mm.
And the statue asks him to stay and help him, and the statue says, look, this person is going hungry. Will you take the jewel from my sword hilt and take it to them. And so the swallow takes it and you know, this person, you know, can eat. And then he sees someone else who's freezing. I think a little match girl who's dropped all of her matches in the water, and she's crying because she won't be able to, you know, make money to help her family. And so he says to the swallow, take the gold leaf off my body and give it to this child. And the swallow does that. And then eventually the all that's left are his two eyes, and the swallow plucks out one eye and gives it to someone. And then the swallow plucks out the other eye and gives it to someone, even though the swallow objects and says, no, you'll be blind. And the happy prince says, no, you have to do this, you have to help these people. And by the end it's so beautiful because I'm gonna try not to cry because it just makes me sob. The swallow, they love each other. The swallow and the happy prince, they just adore each other, and the swallow decides to stay because the prince can't see anymore. But it's the dead of winter, and it's too late for the swallow to leave, and it's much too cold for the swallow. Mm. And so the swallow dies at the statue's feet.
Mm.
And the moment the swallow dies, a crack is heard, and it's the heart of the statue breaking.
Oh.
The councillors and the mayor of the town walk through the town square and look up at the statue, who's now no gold, like just looks terrible. All the jewels are gone, the gold is gone, and they look up and say, "What a horrible, shabby statue. We need to get rid of it." And so they pull down the statue and take it away, and they melt it down. But the one thing that won't melt down is the broken heart.
Oh.
And it's the very, very end that always gets me. And this is always just the last two lines or something, like, actually, I've got them. Let me just see if I could read it, because I always struggle with these lines. "What a strange thing," said the overseer of the workmen at the foundry. "This broken lead heart will not melt in the furnace. We must throw it away." So they threw it on a dust heap where the dead swallow also lay dying, or was also lying. "Bring me the two most precious things in the city," said God to one of his angels. And the angel brought him the leaden heart and the dead bird. "You have rightly chosen," said God.
Oh.
And it's just, it always, it just,
oh,
isn't it? It's so beautiful. It's so beautifully.
It's written. So stunning.
It's just, it's such a beautiful, and I think it's because it's, I think just the love, you know, and it's all about sort of sacrifice and kindness and a connection kind of brought, just people being kind, and there's something so kind of pure and beautiful about that story.
Oh, I mean,
that's why I chose that. That's one of my favorite.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I will find a link and put it in the show notes so you can read the whole story and so I can read the whole story.
Oh.
Are you the statue or the swallow?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I haven't really thought of that. I'd like to think I'm the statue. Maybe I'm like little parts of each. You know, I'd like to think I'm the statue. But I think sometimes I'm the swallow.
Oh, I think there's virtue in the swallow. There's virtue in the swallow. The swallow, to me, from what you've described, the swallow is the facilitator of that love, and also does, which I think is very telling about love, does the thing that's most kind but also most hard, which is take his last eye.
Yes, totally. Totally.
No, to be and kind also, in the truest act of love is that, you know what, I'll just say it, it's making me think of the euthanasia debates and that kind of thing.
Yes. You
know, like that is a profound act of love.
The hardest, the absolute hardest thing, yes.
Yeah. You know what I love? Oh, I mean, I love so many things about this, but the thing, I mean, who wants to hear us two old people crying? But anyway, the thing I love about it is the resilience of the broken heart, right? In the context of this podcast.
And that there is, God considers that a beautiful thing. You know, what does God know? It is of the time. I actually left a little bit off the end of that story because God ends up saying, you know, the swallow and the prince shall come to heaven and praise me. Because I find that a little bit.
Yeah, you don't want that bit. That's fair.
But to find beauty in a broken heart like that, I think that's a big part of what I like about the story.
Me too. But particularly for our listeners. You know, like I find, and I know you and I have talked about this before, like I have profound love and joy in looking at a weathered face.
Yes.
For example, and I say this to someone who thinks he's gorgeous, like a Barry Cassidy, you know, or someone like that, like where you go, oh, that's a life.
Yeah.
Life has been, I can read the life in your face. I don't know 100%. The stories.
100%.
But I think there's probably some heartbreak in there. There's definitely some pain. There's some bloody joy. There's all the things.
And it's all, you know, it's all written on there. Yeah.
You don't get to our age, I don't think, without, you may not, I mean, it'd be rare, but you may not have had your heart broken, but you've definitely suffered.
Yes.
You've definitely suffered.
Yeah.
And we can look at that as life wearing us down, and it's fine to sometimes feel like that. But it's also, to me, you know, it's where our wisdom comes from.
100%, 100%. And I think, you know, you kind of, I guess, you know, going through heartbreak makes love that much sweeter, I guess. And, you know, things like that. It's, you know, you've got to have the dark to appreciate the light, I guess.
Mm.
Mm. But I just, that story just, oh, oh just
it's beautiful.
Just, it's, he was such a beautiful writer.
Oh, I mean, I'm a big Oscar Wilde fan. Can I ask you a very pointed thing?
Mm.
Do you, how are you feeling about your broken heart?
sometimes I see it as a thing of beauty. Mm. Sometimes I really just like it to stop, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, it's exhausting being brokenhearted.
It really is.
It is just exhausting. And it's well, it is grief in a way. I was going to say it's like grief, but having a broken heart, is grief. And grief just leaps out at you from weirdest of places. And
really does.
Yeah. And it really does. You will just be, you know, walking. It'll just leap out from behind a door at some point during the day and you know, overwhelm you. And
or a fucking Facebook memory, but let's put that aside.
Yes.
What I hear in discussions with you, and you know I've experienced this as well, there's times when the broken heart leads you, and many listeners as well will be sitting in this, it leads you to think, oh, it's not my heart that's broken, I'm broken. I'm a broken person. I'm not good at this. I fuck this up. No one wants me.
I've been trying to fight that.
Good.
It's hard not to feel like I've not that I deserve this, but that I failed somehow.
I know. Yeah.
You know, there's another one that didn't work out.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I don't know. I guess we gauge success by, you know, are we, you know, whether it's work or, you know, we have work. These are the things that make us successful. We have a good job. We have plenty of money. We have a stable, you know, relationship. And that, you know, it's very easy to kind of, you know, feel like, oh, well, if I don't have, you know, the relationship's kind of the baseline almost.
And there's...
You are a failure and people kind of like, oh, poor old Scott, you know. Oh,
well, whether they are or not, that's what you think.
Mm.
Right? Because I think a couple of things. There is definitely long-term relationship smugness.
Yes.
And as we've discussed before on the podcast, not always, but in some of those cases, you start getting some information about that relationship and they won't seem so smug.
Yes.
But the other thing is I reckon, and I'm saying this to myself as much as you, consider that idea that the reason, if we're God in whatever sense we interpret it, Swallow chose that and God chose that as an example of the most beautiful things in the city is because it's fucking true.
Yes. Yes.
Right? The illusion is more palatable to most people. So they would rather, for example, be in a shit relationship, but it's we've been together for 40 years. Oh, well, good on you. But what sort of relationship is it?
Yeah. We thought we'd wait until the children died. Yes.
Whereas I think one of the things that I love so much about you is that you do wear your broken heart on your sleeve, because if you don't, then you also can't receive the joy and the real love and the depth and it's all the same box of dice.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, I tried to kind of, you know, I've done that pushing that broken heart down and, you know, and that doesn't work out.
Oh, she's a bitch.
Didn't work out at all. And actually, you just reminded me, actually before I kind of got engaged to Suj and all that kind of stuff. But my mum said to me many years ago, we were talking about, you know, that I think I was single. I must have been single at the time. And I remember mum saying to me, oh, I'm sorry, Scott, you've been so unlucky in that respect.
Mm.
And I said to her, no, I haven't. I've had incredible relationships.
Yeah.
Like she saw me as unlucky for not having necessarily one sustained one.
Yeah, one forever.
But I saw myself as really lucky because I've met a whole, you know, a string of really amazing guys that I've
100%
wanted to be in relationships with. Like, I don't think I quite convinced her.
Yeah.
That was actually, like, I've been incredibly lucky. Like, it's, you know, hard to find someone that you want to spend all that time with. And I've found several.
Look, I've said this one before, but it's worth repeating here. One of the things that I loved most in the sort of last 5 years in popular culture was when Bill and Melinda Gates broke up.
Mm-hmm.
And they both, particularly her, but they both pretty much said, we've been married for 30 something years. We do not consider this a failure, right? This has been a successful relationship.
Right.
We've loved each other. We've held each other. We love our children. It's ended now. And I know, you know, don't bloody email me. I know there's been updates about various other things that have gone on. But for me, I think that's a really lovely framing of it. Because you can, and I'm sure you have, I certainly have, had relationships for a month that have changed me forever.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep.
You know, like it doesn't mean it's a failure.
No, and Bill and Melinda Gates, I mean, they've arguably done more to kind of, you know, help the human race than, you know, any other people.
You know, we had that recently, and I know this is a vexed area because of other allegations, but Sacha Baron Cohen and Isla Fisher, same sort of thing. Like I'm just not sure why the media are shit-canning their statements so much. To me, they basically went, you know, I mean, I thought it was a nice analogy to say, we're not playing tennis together anymore, but, you know, we had some good matches. Like,
yeah.
I think that's, if you can, I mean, that's the jackpot if you can walk away from a relationship. You can be hurt and they can be wrong and you can be wrong and all the things, but to still be able to go, you know, I on some level will always love this person. There'll be part of me that loves them and I don't hate all my time with them. That's great.
It's great. And it's because we're you know, we're fed this kind of romantic ideal.
Yeah.
But that romantic ideal is based on those two people not changing.
Yeah, that's right.
Often.
That's right. And you know what I love, Scott, when I, and there's generational element to this and the ripping up the script and all that sort of stuff, but can I just tell you, like, hand on heart and to any listeners as well, like, I don't look at you and go, oh, poor Scott. I'm like, oh, my God, you're writing this musical and you're in this show and you've got all these beautiful friends and you've got a child and you've got amazing community around you and you're so talented. And I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. I'm saying, genuinely, I don't look at your life and think, poor Scott.
And that's good to hear. Yes, I have to. Sometimes I'm going to remember in the dark times. I'm going to remember you saying that. Thank you.
Please remember that, and you call me, and I'll say it to you again. But I'm saying that as well to listeners because we do get a lot of that shit. That's why we did a special pre-Christmas. Because why does everyone get depressed at Christmas? Because you got to sit at fucking Christmas table and have everyone go, oh, I'm so sorry you got divorced.
Yeah.
Or I'm so, like, are you going to ask if I'm happy about it? Yep. Maybe I'm happy about it.
Yeah.
You are living la vida loca. I'm not saying you wouldn't like a love, and I'm sure there's one at some point in the future, but you don't have to wait for that to be happy.
No, that's true. I've got my cat, for God's sake.
You've got your cat. You've got your bloody skull cup.
That's right. Which is still got a little bit of gin in the bottom.
Got a bit of gin in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You've got wonderful friends. You're part of beautiful communities, all the things.
I'm reminded of a story. We're doing the podcast with Geraldine Hickey soon.
Yeah.
And she's just, oh.
Beautiful.
I just love that woman.
Yeah.
And she, I'm reminded of a story, and I often think of this if I'm feeling a bit down. She bucks me up. But someone said that a few comedy festivals, they ran into Geraldine and she was walking. She'd just done her show and she was walking along the street and she had like a pie in one hand. She'd been to the 7-Eleven and she had a pie in one hand and a chocolate Big M in the other.
Jezza, love it.
And, oh no, Jezza. And they said to her, how are you? And she went, well, I've got a pie. I've got a chocolate milk. Doesn't get any better than this.
Correct.
And I often think that, you know, yep, she's like, that's pure mindfulness. She's reached nirvana, that woman.
And reframing. You know what? Since we're trading comedian stories, one of my favourite jokes of all time is Dave O'Neill.
Mm-hmm.
So Dave O'Neill used to do this beautiful joke about being in the caravan park and, you know, with the family in Dramana or wherever and kind of his dad, you know, leaning back and like, wonder what the poor people are doing. And Dave going, they're in the next caravan, Dad. There is, I hate the whole, oh, it's just how you look at it because there's some like real realities of hardship that need to be taken into account. But there is also some truth in kind of going, depending on your perspective, a caravan park's nirvana.
Oh, yeah. My parents had their honeymoon in a caravan park in Rosebud.
Love it.
Yep.
Just down the road, and they would have thought they were king shit.
They were king shit, and I don't think it mattered where they went. You know,
no, exactly. Exactly. And can I just say to the listeners who are potentially screaming, you know, into their ear pods, I'm not talking about like, oh, it doesn't matter if you can't pay your bills. Like, all that shit is real, right? We all get it. All that shit is real. But there is also something to be said for going, I've got a pie and a big M. This is a fucking good day.
Yep, yep. You got to take the wins where you can get them.
Take the wins. Take the joy.
Take the bloody wins, yes.
Right, you beautiful man. Are you ready for a listener call?
Oh, absolutely. Let's do it.
Hi, Nelly. I just had a question around mental load. I carry the entire mental load for our family, including organising holidays, all of the school apps, NDIS stuff for two children with disability, you know, paying bills, school notices, just like everything, medical appointments, you know, everything. And I've communicated this to my husband, and he just wants me to tell him what to do. And I really struggle with that because I want him to think about what needs to be done rather than me have to think about it, then communicate it to him, and then make sure he's done it. So I was discussing this with my girlfriends, and they were like, oh, yeah, we're in the same boat. But no one seems to have the same level of resentment as I do, and they just sort of take it as the way, like, that's just how it is. But I'm getting increasingly upset and resentful about it, to the point where I just think I may as well be doing this whole parenthood thing by myself. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on what's reasonable. I feel like everyone else in the world thinks it's okay that the woman does all the mental load and life admin, but that just really doesn't sit well with me, and I feel torn and I want out. Thanks.
Okay, Scott Brennan, couple of things. First of all, for listeners, let me name the elephant in the room. You are a gay single man.
Correct. Yes.
I have given you this call is for two reasons. One, because we're all human and all the problems are human, right? So I absolutely subscribe to the fact that we can learn from everybody. But the other reason is you have an uncanny ability to get into the heads of straight men. This has been demonstrated in conversations with me and also in the last two episodes of the podcast. You seem to be able to talk straight.
G'day. All right, let me just.
What the actual fuck is going on? Because I'm raging.
Oh, I'm raging too. And actually, I this was growing up, that was my mum.
Yeah, and all of our mums.
Yeah, because it was that was a real generational a real generational thing. And I remember a dear friend, Michael Cathcart, who's at the ABC now, does a lot of ABC radio. But I remember him saying that, you know, I was talking to him about this, about my mum, and going through the same thing that this caller is going through. And he said, you know, I was saying it's a generational thing. And he said, well, you know, for that generation, you know, they grew up believing that relationships worked one way, that men had this role and women had this role. And then feminism kind of happened. And a lot of men didn't catch up. And apparently that's still kind of happening.
It is.
Following generations didn't quite kind of catch up. I understand her rage. I agree wholeheartedly. Yes, absolutely. That's Jesus. And you see this a lot, that there is kind of a grown up in the relationship. That makes me angry. I have a very dear friend actually who's kind of he's a gay man as well, but because he doesn't have kids and he's single, he's the rock of the family. And the family's like a complete mess in so many ways, but he's the one, he's the peacekeeper, he's the one who has, you know, that anyone calls for any issues, everything from kind of help this shelf is broken to you know, my son is having a psychotic episode.
Scott, he's the swallow.
He's 100% the swallow. And he has said to me so many times, I don't like it. like there's no one for him. So we often joke that we are kind of de facto boyfriends because we do completely fulfill that role for each other.
Lovely.
And you know, the supporter needs support.
You know what I love? All right. I love so many things in here. I love the central question, because people hear women, and in this case, this particular woman, say this stuff about mental load and I'm resentful and da-da, and all they hear is the anger. What they don't hear is the profound hurt that comes before that. Like that statement of your friend saying to you, who's there for me?
Yeah. Yeah.
She is sad.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
She is sad that her husband, who she has communicated clearly to, so please don't be emailing me saying she needs to communicate with him better. She's done that.
Yes.
He's not doing it. And that feels so fucking lonely.
Yes. Yes.
She's sad. The anger is the end point.
That's very true, because she's reached out. She's, you know, because I'm sure other people reach out, the rest of the family reach out to her and go, I need help with this, I need help with this. Mm. She's done exactly the same thing. And there's nobody kind of grown up enough to just say, okay,
worse, in 2024, and I'm not saying this to you like your group of friends is weird to our caller, because I hear this all the time. Scott hears this all the time. The research bears this out. Worse, then your peer group goes, oh, yeah, us too.
Oh, yeah.
So it's normalised.
Yes.
Right? It's completely normalised.
Yeah, and for her to feel so alone in her anger as well.
Oh.
It's like she must feel like the only sane, either the only sane person amongst them or the only insane person amongst them.
At the very least, even if there's no practical solution, to me, the girlfriend should be going, who knows if they're girlfriends? I've made an assumption.
Yeah,
the friends should be going, oh, that's fucked.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
Yeah.
I'd be bloody raging, or I'd be sad, or that must feel lonely, or what, rather than going, oh yeah, that's how men are. No.
No.
Not good enough.
No, that's not how men are. And I think it really is just, he was, you know, I'm making assumptions here, but I'm going to do it.
Do it.
Because I'm assuming he's a straight white man.
He couldn't. He may not be, but let's go.
He may not be,
that.
But I'm assuming it, and fuck that shit.
Hello to all our straight white male listeners.
Hello there. But he's probably grown up with his mum doing all.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Of his laundry and, you know, making sure everything's okay, making sure he's done his homework and you know, he's got his lunch ready for work and also school and all that kind of stuff. And he's just kind of carried on and got married. And then, you know, his wife takes on that all of that responsibility. And I think, you know, he's had it too good for too long.
Right. Now I'm going to put two possibilities to you bouncing off that.
Oh, of course you are.
Right. I oscillate between these two, my own experiences and with my friends and peer group. On the one hand, I have had, and I believe them, I have had straight male friends say to me, I want to do more of what she's referring to, which is the mental load. I don't know how to do it. I wasn't taught how to do it, or she doesn't let me do it at the most extreme. On the other hand, I have seen so many dudes go, pretty much, not that they'll say this out loud because it's unacceptable, that shit's too hard.
Yeah.
Because it's fucking hard. Like, you talk to any mother with a newborn and they'll go, I'd rather be at work.
Yep. And also it's being done.
Yeah, it's being done.
And that's so right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in other words, there's not really a consequence.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Do you know the problem with that? If I'm putting myself in her position, if you then say to that mum, all right, we'll just let the NDIS shit go, who suffers? The kids.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly.
You know, so it's actually not, it's not as simple as, because, you know, you see those things and I think they're funny, but especially with teenagers of all genders, like, oh, well, just, you know, turn off the Wi-Fi and da, da, da. Well, then they can't do their schoolwork.
Yeah. Hmm.
So how is this really a practical reality? Or stop doing the housework. How often do you like said to mums, oh, it just doesn't matter if the towels are folded. Well, now I'm stressed and I'm in a shithole.
Yeah. Yep.
So, like,
yep.
It's really like, do you think, is it what we now consider weaponized incompetence, where there's a deliberate element to it?
Or
is it just I'm lost. I don't know what to do.
Look, it probably, I think a lot of guys don't think about it that much to that extent.
Yeah.
I don't think they just go, oh, if I do this badly, then I won't be asked to do it. I don't think it's actually that deep.
No.
I think it's being done. Why should I worry?
Yeah.
I wonder
in just in the, and maybe this is not generous enough, maybe it's not harsh enough. I do wonder for some, and I don't know if this is her husband, but for some in the back of their minds, even if it's not conscious, it's like, well, if I don't do it, great. I probably won't have to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like I'll kind of vacuum.
I think the difference is that those guys have said to you, I want to do more.
Yeah.
But I don't know how to.
Mm.
I don't think, it doesn't sound like this caller's husband is even at that point.
I wonder. I mean, this is the always the difficult thing because we don't have all of the context.
That's,
I think,
true.
Def, the first thing I want to honour is the caller's rage. Like, do not be ashamed of the fact that you're angry, because I think it's unjust.
Yeah, and I think this happens a lot. I think this goes on a lot. You're definitely not alone in this.
100%. In fact, I would go so far as to say it's more common than not. And it just depends how much you're prepared to accept that. I will say, as a small caveat, having been in opposite sex and same sex relationships, it does happen in both.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that there's some nirvana where you kind of go, like, two people together, it's very rare that I've experienced or seen 50-50.
Yeah.
But she's talking about 100.
Yeah.
Like, if you're doing, if he doesn't know how, and any parent will know what I'm talking about, if he doesn't know how to log into Compass, if he doesn't know how to do the lunch order, if he, for example, maybe the NDIS, and I also have to deal with NDIS, that is beyond where he's currently capable of. I mean, even saying that out loud makes me feel a bit sick because they're both adults. But anyway, let's say that.
Yeah.
But doing school shit, lunches, ballet appointments, going to the dentist, no, you shouldn't have to remind him.
No.
That should be a team effort as parents.
Yeah. It takes two people to make a baby.
Yeah.
Takes two people to rape.
And guess what? Christmas isn't magic. Mum did it.
Yeah.
Hang
on a minute. What? Natalie, no.
I know.
No.
The horrors.
You're going to have to put a trigger warning on this one.
Let's give some practical advice, because I think even though I can hear her rage, like I said, behind it, I hear sadness. And I actually also hear love, because I think she still loves her husband.
Well, she wouldn't do all those things without love, and she wouldn't feel this anger without love.
Yeah, exactly. She would have given up and fucked off by now.
Yes.
May I say, if that's where you land, that's totally up to you. You're allowed to leave. If you want to rescue it and you want some ideas, if I was saying all this to you, Scott, what would you say to me? It's like, what's a pragmatic step that would consider?
I don't know, beyond actually just sitting down and talking to him and saying, this is how I'm feeling, and I'm feeling like I'm doing this on my own.
Yeah.
And I'm at the point now where I want to, you know, if I'm doing it on my own, then I may as well do it on my own. That's where I am, because this is how, and you know, that thing of, this is how it makes me feel, rather than this is what you're doing wrong.
Yes.
This is how I'm feeling right now. Because that's, you know, in a relationship, that's the core of of what's going on.
Yes.
And that's the core of what keeps you together. So, you know, I think just this is what's how it's making me feel.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if I can do it.
Oh, do you know why I love this so much? Because even my instinct is to try and give her solutions that will help him adult. And actually that's not fair because she's still then doing the mental load for him even in that space. Leading it.
Yeah, totally.
Right? So your idea is better. I reckon to sit down with him, and this is one of the few times that I would like actively, deliberately recommend the possibility of relationship counselling because you might need a third party in there.
That's good advice. That's very good advice.
Sit down and go, I feel alone. Like I feel like I may as well be a single mum. And just side note, and this is not me encouraging her to do anything either way, I'm just telling you a fact, there's plenty of single mums who actually feel like their load is less than when they were married because they're not parenting a grown adult as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Like what she says about, yes, I'm doing everything, I might as well do it on my own, there's some truth to that.
Yes.
But absolutely. To say to him, not in an ultimatum sense, but just in it, like, I'm laying it on the line. Like, I am so bereft. And
I'm exhausted. And
I'm so exhausted and hurt and despondent is the way that I would describe it. Yeah. I don't know how to fix this. What do you think?
Yeah.
And if he then does spiral and kind of go, I don't know, but you genuinely believe that he's willing, then I would say then that's when you get a relationship therapist involved rather than you doing even more mental load of going, let's do a roster.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Because I'd bet you my kidney, one of them, that she's already tried that.
Where? Quite possibly. And yeah, even to make it clear, look, this is something that we both need to do. It can't just be me telling you what to do.
No, not doing it.
It can't just be me running this whole show again.
Yeah.
We need to both contribute.
Yeah. We're both parents. And even one thing I would say to her, and this is probably counterintuitive as a feminist, but I would say don't aspire immediately to anything close to 50-50, right? If this is an intractable pattern that's been there for years, he's not going to go from 0 to 100. But I imagine even just his willingness to move a bit would be enough for now.
Yep. And then it's a matter of degree. Yeah.
Right? So, and I'm not even going to give the pragmatic solutions because that's fucking irritating and it's me doing his work as well. He has to take your feelings seriously.
Yes.
Or he's risking losing you. And I wonder if he really knows that.
I don't really have experience of this, Nellie. Yeah. And it's of how relationships can change when kids arrive.
Oh, huge.
You're married to someone else, you're in a relationship and you have that love and you have that connection. Mm. And then kids arrive. Like, what's the kind of shift that happens? Because then you start thinking of yourself as a family and the kids are the important thing. And what happens to kind of that connection?
Well, I think there's really pragmatic things that happen in terms of like sleep deprivation and hormones and money's tighter and all those sorts of things. But I think the shift you're talking about that we do not discuss openly enough is that if there have been imbalances before, when a child comes into the picture, they hit you in the face.
Yeah.
Right. So if you had been, and I will say this hand on heart, I've been part of this dynamic, as in I have personally contributed to it, and she may have as well. If you have been doing more of the housework, more of the cooking, more of the mental load, but you've been kind of able to hold it. And there's part of you that's been socialized to be a giver and people pleaser and all that sort of shit. That's actually not his fault.
Mm.
I say very clearly, like you have done that as much as he's done it. What is, I think, heartbreaking for a lot of women is that when the baby or babies come and you're trying, you can't hold it all anymore. and you're trying to say, please, someone help me. Like I saw this thing the other day. It's like we just started gentle parenting at the same time that the village fucked off. You're trying, and modern, I don't say that as a judgment, but contemporary women are probably also working in a paid capacity.
Yeah.
So you've got all this like draining kind of circumstances, and if your partner of whatever gender can't come with you and change with you, because that's a massive change, even if you have been doing more, and let's say in this case, maybe she was doing his washing or maybe she did most of the cooking or whatever. Okay, that's fair. We don't have to blame anybody.
No.
Can you change now? Because I can't do it all.
Yep.
It makes the existing issues bigger or harder to ignore.
And also, I guess, once kids are involved, that the potential, you know, if you don't have kids, breaking up is horrible. It's a lot easier. It puts pressure on maintaining.
Yes. Things. Yes. Yes.
Makes the stakes a lot higher.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, one of the, let's say, for example, we've had another call on this where, you know, that common story of, oh, our sex life changed when the baby came. Now, of course, that happens, like physically you've changed, all the rest of it, but I'm talking maybe a year's passed or whatever, and it's still bad.
Yeah.
Usually what that means is that you didn't have good communication about sex before the baby came. You know, it's unlikely that the baby, quote unquote, caused it.
Mm.
It revealed it, you know? So I would say the same in this.
Don't go naming your baby cock block.
No.
It's a terrible baby name.
Do you know what?
Baby name.
I think it's quite a good drag name, but anyway. I think the reason I say that is because in the Instagram world and the fucking self-help books and the wellness and the way we talk about this to women, it's a kind of gaslighting where you kind of go, oh, like having a baby caused this. No. The foundations were there. The baby revealed it.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
So can he at least come to the table and acknowledge that the situation's not fair? You might not have the answer. He might not have the answer. That's kind of understandable. But to me, a deal breaker, if I'm being black and white about it, if he can't even come to the table and acknowledge this is a problem, this is hurting you, I want to work with you to fix it, I don't know where that you've got anywhere else to go but out.
Well, yeah, as awful as that is, yes.
Resentment builds.
Oh, and it's not something that disappears overnight.
You know what Helen Thorne said, which I thought was beautiful? I don't know if she made this up or someone said it to her, but resentment builds, guilt lessens. Right? So you might feel guilty, for example, if you make this decision, and I swear to you, I'm not telling you either way to make this decision, but if you decided to leave this marriage, absolutely you'll feel guilty.
Yes.
Over time, that guilt will reduce.
Mm. Mm.
I promise you, if you stay in the marriage as it currently is and there is no change, that resentment will grow and grow and grow, and there'll be a point one day where you don't even like him.
Yep. And that just leads to an explosion.
Yeah.
And that's not good for anyone.
So I guess just to round off my direct advice, and Scott, you tell me if you think this is off the mark.
Mm-hmm.
I would be sitting down, based on what you've said, I'd be sitting down with him and going, everything based on how I feel, this is how I feel.
Yes.
Rather than you didn't do the dishes, you didn't bloody do the school lunch. I feel very alone. I feel like I'm doing it all myself. I feel, as hard as this is to say out loud, I feel like I'd be better off as a single mum. What can we do about it? And just see how he responds.
Yeah. Yes. I think that's great advice, because his first response should be, oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. What can we do?
What can we do? Yeah.
What can we do? And he might initially balk, and then like the next day he might come to you and go, you know what, you're right.
Yep.
we need to fix it. I'm not sure how, but he needs to give you some indication that he's prepared to do this and not just say to her, you tell me what to do and I'll do it. That's not good enough.
Yeah. He just needs to let her know that she's not alone.
That she's not alone and that he can see that mental load is labor. It is so exhausting. I remember when one of the kids was really little and I said to a friend of mine who is a straight white man.
We do know. A few of them. Yes, I know. Yep. There are a couple around.
He doesn't have children even. I said to him, why am I so tired all the time? Because she started sleeping and I feel like I'm getting more sleep. And he said, because your frontal lobe, you've got two frontal lobes, one for you and one for her.
Oh, like, wow.
They are working overtime all the time.
Oh,
And I thought,
oh my God.
God, that's a good way to look at it because all the time you're going, have they gone to the toilet? Are they hungry? Are they cold? Have they slept? You're not even aware of it.
Yep.
But if you're doing that and you've got two kids with disabilities, plus you've got another grown adult not pulling their weight.
How many frontal lobes can you fit in there? Honestly.
Your lobes are fronted.
Oh man, you've got back lobes.
You've got
You had to extend.
Baby got back loads.
Baby got back loads.
Beautiful caller. Good luck. I hope that's in some way helpful. I want you, if you are in agreement, to call back in and tell us if A, that's useful, and B, if any of it worked. Yeah. Because
we're neither of us are trained in this as well.
We really aren't.
To get out that we're just, you know.
I've got some skin in the game, but I will say you're right, and you don't know. Without knowing her husband, it's hard to say.
Exactly.
But I do honour I think her peer group is wrong. I'll say that as a woman.
Yeah.
Her peer group is wrong.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
That's not normal, and if it is normal, it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, are you ready for another new segment for Thirsty Thirds?
Oh, my God.
You are one of the only people who I think will enjoy this title. It is autobiography. And thank you. No one else has laughed at that. I knew you would. Where the point of this one is to think of a public figure and have a look at their like relationships history and sort of see what we can learn from it.
Oh my gosh, you are just new idea, aren't you? That's it.
Right? Yeah. Right on the Daily Mail.
Yes. All right. Oh, have you been tapping phones again?
Oh, I wish I had that technology.
Oh, man.
God, I barely get this podcast out, babe. So I have chosen someone that I've long admired and is of our vintage, and I reckon you probably admired as well as a youngster, and that is Whoopi Goldberg. First thoughts. What are your thoughts on Whoopi Goldberg before I give you any info?
I love Whoopi Goldberg. I love that she's she's kind of painted herself up in the American landscape as this kind of, you know, the voice of liberal.
Yeah.
You know, bleeding heart liberal, basically. Yeah. And I love that, you know, bang up for a bleeding heart liberal, but also a bleeding heart liberal who won't take any shit.
Yes.
And calls out bullshit. Straight, like she's got that real comedian's directness.
Yeah, straight to the point.
Straight to the point, just calls out, won't, you know, talk around an issue. We'll just go, no, this is what's fucked about that.
Don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining.
Yep.
So she, and can I clarify as well for international listeners or for Australian listeners, liberal means something different here. You mean progressive.
Yes, yeah.
Yes, you don't mean liberal in the Australian sense.
Not in the kind of liberal party kind of way, no.
So Whoopi has some great quotes that I'm actually going to lead with these and then tell you her relationships history. She's obviously Hollywood royalty. She's 69 years old.
What? Okay, great. Yep, we've got that. We've got that out of the way. I'm glad we've got that.
She has one grown-up kid. Now, two quotes for you from Whoopi. In one of her books, she said, I thought that in order to be normal, I had to be married. So I got married even though I knew it wasn't right. When that didn't work out, I tried it again and then again.
Oh.
And her second quote in a 2016 interview in the New York Times, she said when she was asked why she wanted to remain single, because she said, I'm out. Like, I'm remaining single for the rest of my life. She said, I don't want somebody else in my house.
Fair enough. Imagine the house, though.
Oh, can you imagine?
I reckon Whoopi's house would be pretty damn nice.
Oh, it would be stunning. How do those quotes hit you?
Oh, God, it just breaks my heart that, you know, I thought in order to be normal, I had to be married.
Yeah.
I got married. You know, it wasn't right. It reminds me of when I had girlfriends.
Yes. Yeah.
And, yeah, so I understand that. And also, not wanting somebody else in your house, like 100%. That really rings true. It's like, even, you know, when I do hook up, when I do you know, the grinder or whatever.
Yeah.
That, I think I never host.
Yeah, right.
I'm going somewhere else. I don't.
Off you fuck.
I don't want anyone else in my space.
So one of the things I love about that quote is that I know one of the things we're trying to do in the podcast is, you know, rip up the script about what it means to be single. Mm. I love that this is an experienced woman.
Mm-hmm.
God knows she's tried to fit in.
How old is she?
69, mate.
Sorry, just had it in my system.
It's still in my system. Do not worry about that. The reason I gave you this one. But I love that, to me, the narrative I get from her is she's like, okay, the world told me that what is normal and what to aspire to is to be married. So I did it, and then I tried it again, and then I tried it again, and I bet you at around 40 to 50 years old, she went, this is bullshit.
It sucks.
Right? I don't actually want this. I want to think about what I want in my life. And I love, as you said, direct comedian, straight to the point, don't want someone else in my fucking house.
Yep. Yeah. Fuck all the romantic bullshit.
Yeah.
She's talking about practicality. She's talking about just day-to-day, everyday life. God, there's somebody else here.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I love about her.
That guy just farted. How annoying.
Oh, I feel attacked.
Yeah, that's why I gave you that one.
Thanks.
But for our long-term single listeners, and some of you are happy about being long-term single and some of you are not, either way, I just think it's an invitation to consider it as a reframe, as the psychologists would say.
Mm-hmm.
What are the positive things about your situation? Go and talk to a raging couple and see how you feel about being single.
Yeah.
Because everything in the ether, even still in 2024, is telling us you have to be coupled to be happy. You have to be long-term to be happy. You have to be aspiring to marriage. Not true.
Yep. I even find, like, having someone else in my – but, like, being in bed with someone or sleeping with someone else, like that, that's a big adjustment now.
Oh, it really is.
That is a huge adjustment. Even that, and I'm asleep.
Yeah.
Let alone actually cohabiting – and being in the house and cooking meals and doing laundry all that. Like, it's a huge, huge adjustment.
Yeah.
Actually have somebody else there.
It's not all a Celine Dion song. It's
not all Celine Dion at all.
And in your case, and in the case of plenty of people listening, you know, you've worked really hard to have an independent space that you enjoy. Mm-hmm. That's not something that you give up on a whim. We're too old for that shit.
Yeah,
if you want that, I'm not talking to the people who want it. That's completely fine to want and you go for it. But if, like many of the listeners, they actually are happy to be single but are constantly getting that person at the bloody dinner party or the at work around the water cooler or whatever, you need to find someone. You don't. Yeah. You can whoopee it up.
Yes.
Channel Whoopi. I'll give you a quick rundown. It's quite interesting, actually. So 1973 to 79, she's with Alvin Martin, married to Alvin Martin for 4 years. He was a drug counsellor.
Right.
1986 to 88 with David Clayson, who was a cinematographer.
Right.
1995, I think for the year.
Right. So they got shorter.
Shorter and shorter. Lyle Trachtenberg. Yeah. So 4 years, 2 years. This one's 1 year. Lyle Trachtenberg, who's a union dude. Her other partners, actor Frank Langella, I think it is, or is it Langella?
Well, I don't know.
Playwright David Sheen, and rumoured, not confirmed, but I think sort of widely accepted, actor Ted Danson.
Ooh.
Yeah, there's some kind of, I'm not going to engage in the gossipy part of it, but there's gossipy stuff involved in that. And apparently in recent years, and I don't know how recent, but she had a boyfriend who was 40 years older than her.
Wow.
Even she's 69, I imagine it can't be that recent.
Not, well.
Right?
That's quite the age difference. But I can be beyond a certain age difference makes no difference, if you know what I mean.
I totally agree. So let's say she was 40 and he was 80. I'm going perfectly fine.
Mm. Yeah. But if she was like
20.
If she was like 65 and he was 15 or something.
Yeah, nah. Or if she was 20 and he was 60, I've got, even though it's not illegal, I've definitely got some question marks ethically.
Yeah, so yeah. Yeah.
Big question marks. You're not cooked then. You're not fully done. You're still in the oven.
No, that's true. And you know, what's her name that married the billionaire? Do you like my body?
Talking about, yeah.
Yes, you know, married the kind of the
Anna Nicole Smith.
That's it, yes. Yep. And very, like, you know, married the guy who was, you know, 40 years or 60 years of senior or something.
Yeah. It didn't end well for anybody.
No, it did not.
No. When you hear, going back to Whoopi, when you hear like these three marriages and multiple relationships, just going back to what you said, which I've also felt and many of the listeners have felt, oh, you know, I've failed at this.
Mm.
When I read that out, did you think of her as a failure, honestly?
No.
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 Let's sit in that for a minute.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
Because I actually read that out. When I was researching, I'm like, oh, you've had an interesting life.
Mm. Mm.
I didn't feel sorry for her.
No. No, but I guess, you know, we knew the we knew the moral of the story before we read that bit. You know what I mean? You know,
No,
I mean, that was her journey.
Yes.
Because there may be at the time she was probably thinking she was a failure. Probably, you know, like by the looks of it, less so, considering that every marriage was shorter and shorter and shorter. She was kind of coming to that, slowly coming to that realization.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I don't know how sad is it that you have to kind of wait to get to kind of the end of the story, you know, or the moral of the story before you can be happy about it.
That's true. But, you know, the positive that I take out of it, I hope this is not too Pollyanna, but I'm guessing from the timelines, as I said, I imagine this revelation somewhere in her 40s or 50s. And some of our callers call in and they're like, oh, I feel like I've wasted, you know, 10 years in a marriage or 20 years or 30 years in a marriage. I did. I'm like, no. You realized it now. And this is a really common experience for a lot of people of all genders in middle age to kind of go, I have been living a script for somebody else. And what I see is Whoopi at some point in that period kind of going, oh God, this is just all bullshit.
Yes.
This doesn't serve me. This is not the life I want. Different thing if she's like, I desperately want a husband and I've died alone. That's sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not what's happened here. She's gone, I don't even want one.
Oh, yeah. I don't want anyone in my house. Like,
yeah,
let alone all the kind of the big love marriage stuff.
I was told I should have one. And I have heard her interviewed, and I can't quote her directly because it was a while ago that I listened to this interview, but someone asked her about sex and she's like, I know how to sort that out. Oh. Now, I took that either she had gentleman callers or she'd got a really good vibrator, maybe both.
Maybe both, or maybe gentleman callers with a really good
with a really good vibrator. Who knows? But either way, she is not bereft, shall we say.
No.
She's doing good. So next time you feel like your little lead heart is on the scrap heap, can you please remember Whoopi Goldberg, Scott Brennan?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Because one day I'll be reading that out on the podcast with your relationship's history and we'll be going, Oh my God, he's fascinating.
Oh my God, yeah, you'll be it'll be a much longer read. I can tell you that.
I'm here for it. I can do a longer episode. When you make it big in Hollywood, and I'll be like, I used to know him. Oh yeah. My God.
And now him and Hugh Jackman are an item. Oh God.
Oh, can you imagine? Who would be, like, if you could pick someone, who would it be? If I gave you a magic wand.
Sam Rockwell.
All right, who's that?
He's the greatest actor you've ever seen. Look him up. He's been in everything. Oh my God,
you're blushing.
I know. He's the one sort of Hollywood actor that if I ever met, I would lose my fucking mind because he's handsome.
Yeah.
He's also, like, you've seen him in everything, but you haven't realized it's him because he's such a great actor. He just transforms.
What's he in?
He's in Jojo Rabbit.
Yep.
He plays the kind of gruff colonel who kind of saves the kid. He played Zaphod Beeblebrox in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He's in Galaxy Quest. I'm such a nerd, but he was in Three Billboards Outside of blah, 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 that movie, Three Billboards.
Is it his looks or is it the vibe of the thing?
It's the vibe of the thing, and also just because he's such a great actor, and I get a little bit weak at the knees.
We return to the fact that you are sapiosexual. It's got
100%
a mental connection. So you think there's something. It's me with Jodie Foster.
Oh, with Jodie Foster. Like, she would have been second.
Like, Jodie Foster. Jodie Foster is not, I mean, as much as I don't have a type, but Jodie Foster is not my type, really. But I just, like, if you said to me, you know, you can have dinner with somebody, you know, like who's sort of out in the ether, it'd probably be her. Like, I just find her so compelling and so intelligent and funny and all the things.
Yes. Oh, all the things. And, you know, I say Sam Rockwell only because David Bowie's no longer with us.
Oh, David Bowie. I'd fight you for David Bowie.
Game on, Mole.
Oh, let's do it. Okay. He'd be happy with both of us. That win-win.
What? We could just offer ourselves in a package deal.
We've just set up a threesome with a dead man.
Well, yeah.
And yes, that will be the title of this episode.
Okay, great.
We're going to keep talking beautiful Scott Brennan, but we're going to end the weekly episode there. So Scott and I are going to keep chatting. To the listeners, to hear the rest of the chat, head over to Patreon and sign up for this and other bonus content. Bonus. What we're going to talk about in the bonus bit, Scott, is that we've got a listener letter from someone who knows, it's heartbreaking. They know their parents really negatively affected their relationship style, their attachment style, and they're basically wondering if that means they can't date. We're also going to do a meme in Armchair Expert on moving on once you break up. And I am going to present a thought bubble to you, Scott Brennan, about freedom in relationships and see what you think about it. So for the listeners, listen to that, the bonus content, you go to Patreon, it's the easiest way. There's a link either in the Dear Nelly podcast website or you go to patreon.com. You get content like this, but you also, let's be honest, it helps me keep the podcast going. That's the truth. I'm not going to bullshit you like it costs money. Having said that, if you can't afford it, I'm with you. I hear you. Cozy lives. Either way, thank you for listening. Still love you. If you can sign up, that would be great. Bye.
Bye.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice. Dear Nelly, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nelly, I'm eager to hear your point of view. Dear Nelly, there's a lot to explore. Dear Nelly, when you're 40 or more. Dear Nelly, so I'm hoping we can talk it through. Fabulous guest, dear Nelly, won't you? you think I should do.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey Miles, thanks for listening to Dear Nelly. Don't be shy, I'd love to hear your questions and comments. To send me like a voicemail recording or an email or whatever, go to dearnellypodcast.com and follow the links, and you might just hear me talk about your question or comment or thought bubble in a future episode. Huge thanks to producer Sam Peterson from the Producer Boy Creative Production team, and to producer Faye Younger, who in addition to being an excellent producer is also a brilliant real estate buyer's advocate and can be found at youngerhill.com. Thanks to Acast and all the team, and mostly thank you to you. Without the listeners, I'm just a middle-aged mole talking shit to no one in the ether. Love yous.